I'm Michael Hall.
And I'm Andy Davis.
And we want to welcome you to the Day Advantage, the D&D podcast for two old school dudes, Andy and me.
Embrace some new school play, which would be, what, D&D 5e, 5.5, 6e, whatever this is that we're into now.
One D&D, two D&D.
The forever D&D, there's just, forever D&D.
That is what they should name that freaking thing.
Oh my gosh.
Forever D&D.
Yeah, it's like, what did Xbox do? They did something like that where they like, Xbox 360, and then they were like, okay, well, maybe not 360. We've got to go back to something else.
There's good naming and there's bad naming.
There's good naming and there's bad naming.
We've been involved in some good naming and bad naming at that level.
For sure.
Hey, everybody. So happy holidays. It's right in the middle of holiday time, but like we've got an interesting little episode. We're going to do something a little new. We are doing a face-off, but this time we're going to do a homebrew magic item face-off.
That's
just
right.
In time for the holiday for your players.
Everybody, these are the cheapest gifts you can give your players.
Free.
It's just some ideas.
That's right. I suppose you could be paying for them for the rest of your campaign if they turn out to be overpowered.
So if they're OP, then you're way out of luck.
Well, Andy, I think, since what we're going to do is we're going to do a little face-off. We're going to do three magic items of whatever rarity you wish, and we're going to compare them, and then we'll declare one of us the ruler of all magic items with a crown and a tiara and a scepter and all
lots of stuff. You're just going to get all the things. Stuff. Yeah, we're going to get all the things
can have all the magic items.
You can just have it all. You can do it.
So, Andy, when we do these things, how do we always start? We usually start
I believe we start as you would start any battle.
That's right. Roll initiative.
Roll initiative.
Oh, crap. Oof. I'm terrible.
Right down the middle.
Oh, what'd you get?
10.
Oh, I got a 9. All right. So you can choose to go first or you can choose to go second, but the person who goes second does 2 in a row.
I'll go first.
Okay.
I'll go first. I got the initiative. That means I go first. I'm going to go first. Right. Okay. So the first item I have is you as an adventurer, you and your party, you've come into the abandoned mansion. You've defeated the ghost that's haunting it. And you're at like a woman's dresser and you open up the dresser and you're looking in the top, some of the drawers. And as you come to the drawer, you come to a single silver glove. It's like a long glove, like an opera glove. Comes up to the mid wrist on your hand, and for whatever reason it seems to fit either hand, and it is the silver hand. So the silver hand is a long glove made of silver cloth that reaches up past the elbow like an opera glove. It has the following benefits: it gives you a +1 bonus to sleight of hand checks, and it gives you proficiency with the lyre. Ooh. Right, so if you weren't proficient with the lyre, now you are. And while you're attuned, you can remove the glove and it will act as like a mage hand.
Oh, neat.
So essentially, once you've attuned, you can animate it and it will act like a mage hand. Now it's totally visible. And if it's removed, it will return to your attuned user. If you happen to have lost a hand, if you're an amputee, it will act as a normal hand. So you can just basically pull it over your stump and you will have a silver hand. Thus the name Silver Hand.
Nice. I like it. That's good. That's good. And what's the rarity, did you say?
I said this one. I believe I said this was rare.
Rare. That sounds about right.
It's about right. It's not super powered, but I think interesting flavor element. We had a character in a campaign I played a while back with Peter and some of his friends where one of the characters lost a hand. And so this was a way to kind of turn that from like a downside to a benefit.
Nice. I like it. Yeah, I think that's cool. I like the whole idea of just some like D&D has so not like permanent injuries and stuff like that with all the thing isn't a thing. So like introducing that particularly if a player is open to it, but then not making it a negative for them.
Can be
interesting. Right.
And I just love the idea of being able to like pull this glove off and all of a sudden the glove is like almost like a little snake or just it's very ghostly,
playful, super ghostly all the same time. Love it. Well, Andy, I run in Shattered Chasms. I have a big game called The Lost City of Air, which is a floating city that our characters have discovered and are adventuring in. And inside the City of Air, they stumble across a toy shop at some point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a toy shop, a magical toy shop. One of the things about Air is that some of the most powerful magicians in Air are actually artificers. So there's a lot of sort of things magical things. It's we're right. moving from a low magical setting into a high magical setting. And so as they stumble into the toy shop, one of the first things they find is a bunch of stuffies. And these stuffies wow. are Tinker Tam's Snuggle Bugs. So Tinker Tam is my sort of the guy who makes all the magical toys in yeah. here. And Tinker Tam's Snuggle Bugs, Tinker Tam believes in the power of a good snuggle. These adorable, ultra soft, and extra large stuffies all provide unique advantages when somebody takes a long rest with them. Each stuffy has only 4 charges and does not recharge. Once a snuggle bug has been used, all its charges, it's just a lovable, oversized stuffed animal. And there are 4 of them for you. There's Clyde. Clyde is an adorable, multicolored, oversized spider. A long rest with Clyde strengthens your spirit and stamina, providing 1d6 plus 4 temporary HP, and you can pass through webs unobstructed for 24 hours. There's Jimmy. Jimmy is an adorable, multicolored, oversized cricket. A long rest with Jimmy strengthens your spirit and stamina, providing you, again, the same 1d6 plus 4 temporary points, and you can add 5 feet to any jumps you make for the next 24 hours. There's Henrietta. Henrietta is an adorable, oversized T-Rex. A long rest with Henrietta spirit strengthens your spirit and gives you 2d6 plus 4 temporary hit points for the next 24 nice. Hours. And then finally, the last of our snuggle bugs, Sheila. Sheila is an oversized iguana, Andy. A long rest with Sheila gives you that 1d6 plus 4 temporary hit points, but you now also have dark vision for 24 hours.
Holy shit.
Tinker Tam snuggle bugs. Do you only get one, really, right?
Wow.
They're rare. Wow.
That's... I want a Tinker Tam snuggle bug.
Right?
I mean, hell yeah, that sounds amazing. Wow, that's awesome. That is awesome. Okay. I'm gonna switch the mood.
All right.
This is a small silver coin. It's heavily tarnished, right? It's just sitting in your hand. And when you look at it, when you inspect it closely, you see one side of it is engraved with a devil and the other side is engraved with a demon.
Ooh.
It is a tiny token of evil.
Whoa.
Right? So it has 1d10 charges. You can expend 2 charges to cast the spell Bane as an action when you're attuned. The charges are restored when you perform minor acts of evil.
Oh. That is a total mood switch.
Yeah, total mood switch. So 1 charge is restored per act. They could be things like, you know, petty theft, slightly harmful pranks against neutral or good aligned characters. And it is actually a cursed item. You can't get rid of it, yeah. but you have this tiny token of evil. They're very rare. Maybe there's 100 of them. Maybe something happens if you collect all 100 of them. But I just love the idea of this coin that just lets you cast Bane, but is also like slowly pushing you to bad things. Oh my God,
I love it. I love Bane.
And Bane is like
Bane's a good spell.
It's a great spell.
I think the problem is that, like, mechanically, Bless is better. It's better to have advantage than to have... Mm-hmm. But Bane just feels so much more flavorful than Bless.
Yeah, yeah.
I dig it.
I think also, like, if you're not a spellcaster, but you have this and now you can cast Bane, like,
right.
think of the fighter who has this in their pocket and can all of a sudden use Bane as part of what they're doing. I mean, it becomes pretty
have powerful. In Baldur's Gate, I have a ranged bow character with Bane, it's just really good because you're dishing out Bane all over the field, right?
Right. So that's the tiny token of evil.
We didn't do the double up. I was supposed to double up.
I'm sorry. You should go.
Are you done with your...
I'm done with the tiny token of evil. It's an item I put in my Namatoki's Tower.
This is awesome. Adventure. Tiny token of evil actually flows nicely into my tiny thing. you're in this Tinker Tam's Emporium, and you've moved down another aisle now, Andy. So you started in the plushie aisle, and now you've moved to the minifig aisle. Speaking of tiny. And you've come across a small wooden figurine of a pixie warrior posed for battle. You have just now picked up Tinker Tam's Pixie Cut-Cut. And once a day...
An action figure, exactly.
Once per day, Pixie Cut-Cut can be thrown up to 20 feet away and summon the Pixie Cut-Cut to your side for 1 hour as both a defender and a potential hairstylist, if you like pixie cuts. You may command cut as a bonus action. Otherwise, she takes the dodge action. And she's a tiny fey, and she basically is like a summoned. She has 20 hit points. She has a flying speed of 60 feet, and she can hover. And then the coolest thing is, you know, she's got sort of standard stuff, you know, immune to being charmed, as you might expect. And her proficiency equals your bonus. So that's pretty cool. So it scales a little bit. But, and she can do flyby, right? Which is pretty good standard for a flying character. But, and she can do a multi-attack with her salon shears, and she can do two attacks at a base of +5 and then a 1d8 +4 slash jump. So it's pretty good additional for a bonus action. But the coolest thing about Pixie Cut-Cut is that she can do the Pixie Cut. Cut-Cut's real passion is hairstyling. She can use her action to quickly give a target on a hit the best hairstyle ever, instead of dealing damage. And unless told otherwise, she explicitly always goes for the Pixie Cut.
Got it. So what you're saying is when that bugbear is attacking you and you summon Pixie Cut-Cut, Pixie Cut-Cut is going to give the bugbear a Pixie Cut.
That is right. If you nice. If you so command it and she hits...
asymmetric right. fur, everybody.
Yeah. So you fur can you could tell her what, you know, give him a mohawk,
or
he'll give her, or
she'll just him a, or she'll hang around with you and just give you a haircut.
That's right. You and your friends,
your entire party, coiffed hair. Perfect. We want to look like flock of seagulls.
That's right.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Okay.
And she is also another rare item.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe a little bit better than rare because I gave her multi-attack, but still.
Yeah, I think that's sort of very rare. Yeah.
She only has 20 hit points, though, so it's not like she's OP.
That's awesome. Okay, so then my last... We were kind of introduced to this in our last playthrough with Walton, is the farmer's friend.
Oh, I love the farmer's
friend. Right. So I just wanted to, I figured this would be a good opportunity to talk a little bit more about the farmer's friend, since I do really like it as an item. It is a legendary magic item. It is a pitchfork. It is an oak handle, very strong, 6 feet long or so, and then three golden tines coming out from it, glistens in the sun. And it is a legendary weapon. It is probably an artifact created by Shantaya, one of the harvest gods, something like that. And it is there to help the farmer, both in offense and defense. So you have a +3 bonus to attack and damage rolls. It is clearly a magical weapon. Just by being attuned to it, you have the ability to speak with plants. They're your friends. You can talk to your plants whenever you need to. It has 2d4 charges, up to a maximum of 8, that recharge 1d4 daily, and they can be used by the wielder for the following. You can choose, on a successful hit, you can choose to do an additional d8 of necrotic damage per charge to the strike. I don't think that's an ability that I ever used during our fight, something that is something. You know, so basically, you can use it to like a smite. You know, you can burn charges to do a smite, and then you can also use an action to cast the following spells, which take different levels of charges. So for a charge, you can cast Entangle, which is a concentration spell. For two charges, you can cast Spike Growth, which I have come to realize is possibly one of the nastiest spells in the game. It's quite gnarly. You can also use three charges to cast Plant Growth, which is the thing that sort of like restores fields. And if you were to, you know, if you spend, I think, 2 days casting, or like a week casting Plant Growth over an area, you will basically restore it. It'll be like super productive for a year. And then lastly, you can spend 6 charges to cast Wall of Thorns, which is another kind of gnarly. Yeah.
That worked really, really well in the Battle of the Seven.
Yeah. And then...
Although it did limit your barbarian from doing...
Yes, it is raging. Kind of funny. It is super funny to have the... Like, again, this is one of those things where it's like suboptimal choices, right? You know, having a barbarian character who is wielding a spellcasting weapon is super funny to me.
Yeah.
So... but you can also see how like this would definitely be something that would be passed down in a family, you know, passed down as a tool to, you know,
great.
It has a few other pieces around it. If an evil or chaotic character attempts to attune to it, they're affected as if the blight spell had been cast against them. So it will not tolerate anything other than neutral or good. And, you know, if you, and basically it acts as like a spear. So if you're proficient with the spear, you are proficient with the farmer's friend.
Nice. Yeah. I love it. And we saw it in action.
Yeah.
So it didn't, I would say, you know, you could almost make that very rare depending on the situation and it wouldn't.
Yeah.
It was legendary, but it could also be very rare. And I don't think it would be OP at very rare either.
Right. For sure. I think it is one of and that's something we can talk about at the end of this is like, what do those different categories mean? And like, all the rest of it.
And they're like with anything with like CR rating,
they're fuzzy.
It really depends. What depends on your game, right? Yeah. Like it really just depends on your game. All right. So the last item on your shopping list at Tinker Tam's Emporium is the Clockwork Lightning Bug Tam's Model 2 Infusion, Andy. this is a special, very rare magic item for artificers. The Tinker Tam, as I mentioned, was known for his advanced magical item infusions for artificers. The Model 2 Clockwork Lightning Bug is the most advanced magic tech solution on the market and only available as a magical infusion for level 8 artificers. Here are the basic details. A large copper and bronze lightning bug, 3 inches in length, whirring and buzzing via its cogs and gears. Its light-producing abdomen glows dimly and is fashioned from a long tube with wires within it. The bug zigs and zags within a few inches of a lightning launcher, thunder gauntlets, or an eldritch cannon and can enhance their performance. It has an AC of 15 and 10 hit points and is considered to always be in the space of the artificer or the cannon until it falls to 0 hit points or a creature grasps it. If it falls to 0 or is grabbed, the bug stops functioning. If destroyed, it can be reconstructed with a mending spell, bringing it back to life with 1d8 hit points. It has some really amazing powers, and they mostly require charges. The bug has 1d8 plus 3 charges that recharge at dawn. The artificer can use the charges to enhance their weapon in the following ways. These are the custom cool things. Number 1, lit. You can cast light on demand centered on the bug for no charges. Light them up. You can cast Fairy Fire without concentration and from range, centered on the bug's location. This requires 2 charges. Charged Up! Once on each of your turns, the artificer may add an additional 1d8 damage to a successful hit. This requires 2 charges. Shocking Riposte! When attacked and hit, the character or cannon, if the bug is attached to it, may retaliate with a shocking grasp attack using the artificer's spell attack for 2d8 lightning damage against up to 2 enemies within 5 feet. This requires 2 charges and uses the reaction of the artificer. And then finally, the big baddie, Electrical Overload. As an action, you can overload the bug and target 3 enemies within 15 feet with a chaotic lightning strike. Each creature targeted must make a dexterity saving throw of DC 15. A creature takes 8d6 lightning damage on a failed save, or half as much damage on a successful one, and this requires 4 charges.
Super fun.
Yeah. So,
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I debated, is this legendary? Doesn't quite feel legendary. There's nothing overly, you know, it can, just can cast.
No, I mean, it's really fun. Yeah. It's super interesting to think about, like, what is legendary and what isn't. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like in some ways, it's a storytelling around it. But yeah, before we get on to that part of it, the conversation, right. Like, as an item, that's super cool. I love the different tiers of electricity and sort of lighting themed stuff. I mean, the idea of this sort of like mechanical glow bug that is supplementing all of your efforts is super fun. You know, that you can attach it to the cannon.
Right. You could make this part of an artificer's kit, but like, I've got an artificer in my campaign and I've just given him a lot of sort of magic items that only he can use because they're only for that. He can only use them as infusions, right? So he has to use one of his infusions to manufacture it. So there's a little bit of economy for him. It's not just an item that he can always have. And then he still needs to attune to it. So it's like it uses up one of his infusions and he needs to attune to it. So I think those restrictions are worthwhile. And then that way I feel good about sort of just giving him things that make the artificer feel fun and juice up his artificer-ness.
Well, yeah, let's just talk like real quickly about like what the philosophies around magic items and making magic items, like when you're homebrewing stuff, you know? So for me, I always like to think of them as, you know, when you think of like uncommon, I think up to even rare, like they don't, I like giving lots of low power magic items that are kind of unique, like this, that don't necessarily require that you have attunement, right? Attunement is there as a mechanic to keep people from having, that forces them to make lots of choices so they don't just end up where they've got, you know, 40 magic different separate pieces of magic armor on and they're just absolutely, you know, a god couldn't hit them kind of a thing.
Right.
You know, so I like giving those because they don't tend to, they give the characters lots of options. They give the players lots of options, but they don't tend to unbalance the game.
No.
Conversely, it can be really fun to give them their, I just saw recently, I think it was on TikTok or somebody was talking about like, oh, I think it might've been Brendan Lee Mulligan was talking about like, oh yeah, give that third level paladin, give him a Holy Avenger, you know, somebody shows up and hands him a Holy Avenger. Holy Avengers are sick, you know, it's like plus five. I mean, you can cast all kinds of spells. They're kind of like the farmer's friend in that effect of like, but they're also trouble magnets. You know, they're just, if somebody knows, if you're a low level adventurer and somebody realizes that you've got this, like insanely powerful magical artifact, they're gonna come for you, right?
think about it, interesting as they get bigger,
like the story hooks around the items they're carrying become, there's a lot of potential there, you know, which I think is really fun.
I'm of the same philosophy on the first part, Andy. What I do, I'm also in air, there was a candy shop, and so they found a lot of magical candy, so consumables make for great little funky little things. Like, eat this chocolate and you get a spell slot back, or, you know, just lots of little simple mechanics, but are consumables. So they're,
one thing makes you larger, one thing makes you smaller.
Exactly. And they're just fun, right? And so I've done lots of those. I've done like liquids or flowers, like a lapel pin that does things, but all consumables so that they, characters have to choose to use them, but then they add to the flavor of the game. And you can make, as you can tell from the ones that I listed off, like I like to make silly ones. But like
the snuggle bugs, honestly, dude, the snuggle bugs are the funniest thing ever. Like when you first, I was like, is he making tribbles? Like, are these gonna be tribbles? And I was like, no, they're like literally you're making your character, these like grim dark characters have to freaking sleep with a giant stuffed animal. My daughter would go nuts for those things. She'd be like, I never want to give it up. I'm like, well, you know. You can't sleep with it every night, or you're just going to like use it up, and then it's going to have a stuffy.
Then it's still a stuffy.
It's okay. I'm going to keep it with me. I'm going to keep Henrietta.
Right?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites ever, to be honest. No, that's awesome. I think I've told you this, Andy, like all of these, I've made the box covers, right? So like I've created a very elaborate design system for all of Tinker Tam's toys. So they all sort of look similar, but it's like all on brand. Tinker Tam
it's like a TT logo.
It's all like sort of super scripty and very sort of, you know, turn of the century kind of script style stuff.
That's very funny.
Yeah, it's fun.
This is what happens when you have a design degree and you're like, oh, hey, I can make a logo for this thing. That'd be cool. Right? Yeah.
My players lose their mind because then I'll drop this and they're like, here's the box. And they're like, the box? What?
So I think when you're thinking about designing items, I think, so one of the reasons and this is maybe a slight difference in your and I's philosophy. My tendency is for stuff like Farmer's Friend, is it's real easy, especially when you go big, it is real easy to end up with something that just, you know, you want to give your players stuff to make them feel like they've accomplished things and they have things that they love and that they want to be able to use. And that stuff's great. But you also don't want to get in a position where every fight goes exactly the same way because the thing that you've given them is so powerful that they're just like, their players move to optimize their abilities, right? You know, so they're gonna, if you give them something that plays into their lane so strong,
right,
and then all of a sudden they have this really powerful thing that you have to, that maybe it's like really messing up gameplay, right? You know, that you don't like if you scale, like, okay, you've given them something powerful, so you scale up the enemies. Well, then all of a sudden other players are getting knocked out really fast because the scale is like affecting people in uneven ways. So I always tend to be a little conservative about how I'm designing those things, because I don't want them to be so like Farmer's Friend is like a plus five. You know, if I were to like model it after like a Holy Avenger, you know, let's say it's plus five, and when I was working out the design and everything, you know, I considered three alone is pretty strong, like more pluses, like more charges, like, you know, the ability to not necessarily have cast Entangle, but not have to maintain concentration on those sorts of things. Like those are all things that I considered, but they just become OP. Like it becomes, you just become like essentially unstoppable as a player. You know, or as a villain.
I think we are a little bit different on that. I mean, like I'm a little less afraid of overpowering my players, but I'm also not afraid of amping up the danger just exponentially on them because of it. And I tend to spread those things around, right? Like most of the players know that if they get a magic item, they're not going to get one for a little while, and then someone else might get one. It's also a way, what I've done is for players that are struggling to find their character or struggling to make their character relevant in certain aspects, I will give them magic items to make them, to sort of counter their weaknesses, or not counter them, but amplify their flavor so that they feel more engaged in the game.
I think, like, as an example of a magic item that does exactly that, if people are familiar with like the first season of Vox Machina in Critical Role, Grog had something called a chain of returning, right? Mm-hmm. What is it? It's literally, he's a barbarian. He has very few ranged attacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's carrying around this amazing axe. Well, he got a chain that's attached to the back of the axe. So when he throws the axe, he can yank the chain and the chain comes back to his hand, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's like not a big magic item, but it solves a problem for Travis around Grog's character, where Grog's character couldn't be in some fights because you have people flying up above him and he's like, oh, I can't do anything. I'm going to sit here and, you know, eat some jerky and watch everybody else blast stuff up in the sky because I can't get to them.
Yeah,
you know?
It's good.
So those sorts of things I think are really interesting kind of utilitarian items.
Yeah.
That can be fun.
Yeah. It if you can help your characters solve some problems or become more relevant when they're all of a sudden finding themselves less relevant because of whatever's going on, it's important.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Nate, so where do we net out? I mean, I don't know if anybody loses in this battle.
Here's the thing is I don't think anybody loses.
Yeah,
but I'm going to give you on flavor points. You had like a thematic thread through the toys. You had a thematic thread,
toys.
Of Tinker Tam and the toys that was kind of overpowering. I think I probably had more range.
Yeah, you definitely had more. Absolutely more range.
but I think on a thematic level for the holidays, I think you definitely sort of in the
toy store. I mean,
the toy store. I mean, come on. But it's hard to say who wins or loses. I think that like I really like Silverhand and I like the tiny
Silverhand is Eva. Silverhand's great. I think I might actually ask you for that one because I might give that up.
Yeah, Silverhand's. I like them and I like. The tiny token of evil was something that I made as kind of like a little thing that people could find. There's not a lot of lore attached to it, but I do think it's like a super interesting, it has a lot of potential as like a story hook.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think those are the sorts of where did it come from? Who makes it? Why has it got devils and demons fight? Like, where does this
makes me think of the tiki in the Brady Bunch, the tiki.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The lava stone from Hawaii that makes everybody, you know, that's going to, you know,
bad luck.
It gives you bad luck. That's exactly what it is. Right. You know, a little bad luck coin for everybody else.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, excellent, Andy. That was a good episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to do the dad joke. So, Andy, in the homebrew category, I've also created a girdle of haste made of watches.
Oh no!
Yeah, yeah. It's called a waste of time.
You're wasting my time is what you're doing.
Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho. And so it's just so that I can do.
Nice.
Well, thank you.
We gotta write some Santa ones.
Yeah, I did. I think I had a bunch of really good ones for Halloween. I enjoyed those.
Yeah.
All right. So socials.
Yeah. So you can find us. We're active on Instagram. We're active on Facebook. We're on TikTok, although I don't think we're doing that much there just yet. But you can find links to all of those things at our link tree, which is linktr.ee/thedadvantage. And also, and I would just encourage you, if you're enjoying the podcast, if you're enjoying what we're doing, please rate and review us. It helps other people find us. It helps other people who might enjoy this stuff get onto the pod and get onto this stuff. We have a great audience. We love you all, but we just want more people.
Yeah, we want more. Give us more. Share the love, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Share the love. So, yeah, you can find us all there. And yeah,
excellent. Well, please, yeah, as I'll just double tap, Andy. Please rate and review us. Best way you can support the show. Tell your friends. Exactly. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you all for the listens.
Thank you, and have a great holiday, everybody.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Talk to you soon.